it's a constant like cycle of making sure training is ongoing for our staff.
And then the other thing that happens is as new archaeology information is uncovered, our story changes a little bit. And so archaeology, the things that we say sort of evolve over time, mm-hmm. and we have to sort of make sure everybody is up to speed on the latest thing. And you know, that's tricky because, you know, people are trained to say one thing and then the archaeologists come along and go, you know,
right.
We've been really rethinking that. And so that's a hard process, but it's a really rewarding one in that, you know, it's always great to just be up to date.
Well, and to be up to date and to be able to add things to it and make it so fluid, it's got to be exciting that it's not just that you when you're an interpreter, you're not just always doing the same thing. Things are changing.
Right. That's exactly right. And you want it to be fresh and new and as accurate as possible. And the more information we get, the better we get.
Allison, you mentioned when you're closed January and February, are those the months that you really plan for the next year and you plan for programs and really, really map things out?
Yeah, so we kind of talk about January and February as our off season or our like training season or housekeeping season. For me, it's a little less like that because I'm already planning for the birthday, like knee deep. My off season is like basically right after 4th of July. So I kind of have 2 months to like get myself together for the upcoming year. And we kind of plan our next year's calendar in that time period. But for a lot of the other staff in the education department, for the interpretation manager, for the school and youth programs manager, they take this time to kind of regroup, get things back together, train their staff, get things really rolling and scheduled, and work on all that training for the next upcoming 10 months.
Is it just me, or it seems like there's a lot of, this fall is really busy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think in the past we've had like a really big concentration on spring, which we still do have. But I think this fall is a little bit busier because we've moved some stuff from spring to fall, like the block party, because fall is a beautiful time at Kenmore and I'm a personal fan of fall. So I was like, why don't we have like bigger fall events? So it was kind of my goal this year to move some stuff to the fall to really bring Kenmore and its beautiful fall colors to the forefront.
Kenmore.org, the website to get all kinds of information. Facebook has it all too. We'll take a break and come back and jump into all the things going on at Ferry Farm and Kenmore this fall. Kenmore.org. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
It is the George Washington Foundation in this morning. Kenmore and Ferry Farm. Dave Maraca, Ann Waters, and Allison Ellis here this morning. Kenmore.org. And I guess we start with the community block party, since that is a big event, and that is coming up on
September 28th.
Yes. I couldn't read my own writing once again.
Okay, so you get the check plus now.
Take it away from me. I was looking at it and it looked like an 18, and I thought it's not the 18th. I know that.
Yeah, so September 28th, it's a Saturday. It's going to be from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock at Historic Kenmore. This is a really fun event, and we have called it the Community Block Party this year because it is really focused on the community. This program started a couple years ago when we were having our centennial celebration of Kenmore to celebrate the preservation and the community that Kenmore created when it became a museum and a public space. So we've kind of carried that through. This is the third year of the event, and like I mentioned, it just moved to the fall, so you get to see Kenmore in a different season this year. And so this community block party is focused on bringing the neighborhood surrounding Kenmore, as well as all of Fredericksburg, in and making sure that people know that this is a space that you can bring your family, that you can just come and enjoy a picnic at, and just have fun. I think a lot of the time people think of Kenmore as kind of a stuffy like museum where you can't go and you can't touch anything, you can't play around on the grounds. It's very serious, but we want to change that opinion of Kenmore. And we also focus on the preservation aspect of Kenmore. So we have a lot of both our staff and community organizations coming out to talk about preservation at Kenmore and the surrounding Fredericksburg area. So we've got a lot of fun activities and a lot of fun groups coming. And it'll just be a really good time for the whole family.
The whole preservation aspect of it, the women that helped save Kenmore, it's a great story. Just the women who just were single-minded in all of this. I remember a few years ago you had a big display that year talking about it.
Yeah.
It's really an interesting story.
Yeah, so Kenmore was saved in 1922. A local chapter of the DAR, the Daughters of the American Revolution, came together, and Kenmore was actually slated for either redevelopment into apartments or demolition completely. And these ladies said, no way, that's not going to happen. This is a beautiful home with a wonderful history, and it's worth saving. So this kind of goes back to the Mount Vernon Ladies Association that saved Mount Vernon in the middle of the 19th century. And so that's kind of a system that was brought through preservation through the next 100 years, ladies groups getting together and saving these historic properties. And that's exactly what happened in our case. So they got together in 1922 and decided that they were going to raise the money to purchase Kenmore. So they wrote letters and campaigned across the whole country and raised the money to purchase the property and turn it into a museum. So it is a really cool story that I think a lot of people forget about. And it's the whole starting of our organization. So it's really a special one that we get to tell, and got to really focus on it a couple of years ago when we had our 100th anniversary.
Well, and you think about Kenmore, you think about Ferry Farm, how that was saved from development. There really is, the George Washington Foundation has quite the story of just people single-handedly going up against a lot of different forces to be there today.
Yeah. So both Kenmore and Ferry Farm have different but similar stories. A bunch of protesters, local community members came together to save Ferry Farm as well 70 years later. So it's a really great story that we get to tell at both sites, and it's really great.
And both were long shots. I mean,
right.
When you think about how many historic sites that have sort of been developed over the years, and there are fabulous buildings that were like in New York City that were knocked down that created the national law that sort of protects historic buildings now. The track record for saving historic buildings has not been great, and so both of these buildings both these sites being saved is just just an amazing achievement.
Yeah.
And these community members stood up to Walmart of all places. I mean, they were going to build a Walmart at Ferry Farm, so they managed to push that off and save Ferry Farm, which is incredible to me.
Oh, it is, and it's never lost on me that, especially Dave, when you and I will walk around it with the archaeology, or you see the things that are popping up on the grounds, and just to know that all of that would be, people might be parking there today, or shopping over all of that.
Yeah, you cannot have a shopping center and a historic site side by side. They are not compatible. And the one that always loses is the historic site.
Yeah.
The shopping center doesn't mind, but the historic site can't operate in that kind of environment.
You look at Salem Church.
That's the one I use. That's the example I use.
Yeah, of where that site itself has totally been lost, and the Park Service does what they can to tell that story, but it's just been engulfed with everything.
Yeah, and it's impossible to find.
Yes, yeah, that's the other thing. You've got to know there's one-way streets and in everything. And in your case too, you think of all the kids that they come through on these tours, especially at Ferry Farm through the year. And through the years, have been able to do that, they wouldn't be doing that.
Oh, yeah. And it is so interesting because we do get, I mean, we get local schools primarily. So, you know, Spotsy, Fredericksburg, Stafford. And we do have some schools that come from further away. But we are their, like, field trip. So I know growing up, every class had that year's field trip. So we always went to Jamestown, for example.
And yeah.
It's kind of a trek. I grew up in Richmond, so it's a little bit of a trek down to Jamestown. So it's nice for all of these local counties that we are there, you know, the second grade field trip, they come to learn about George Washington, they see the site, they get to experience history in this unique way. And if Ferry Farm didn't exist, they wouldn't have that opportunity. And I think that, you know, it is very accessible because we are essentially in people's backyards for this local community. And I think that's really important for these communities that do have these local historic sites. For field trip school programs especially, it makes it more accessible than having to bus, you know, up to Mount Vernon or somewhere that's hours away.
It is always great to go by Ferry Farm and see school buses there.
Oh, and yeah, know and that they're coming back.
They're all around.
Yes, yes. We already have groups booked for end of September, October. So it's exciting, and we do get groups that come back, you know, year after year and have that established connection with us and our program. So that's always fun.
And I've known people that have, and adults who will go because their kids have gone to Ferry Farm. They've said to me stories of, yeah, I'd always heard about it, and then their kids went to Ferry Farm, and then they decided they needed to go.
Yeah. When kids go back and share what they've learned, it's very exciting. And we've had that happen with summer camps too. I think last year we had a summer camp participant who brought her whole family back. So it just kind of spreads through the family, which is fun, and they want to come and share what they've learned is exciting.
Allison, you mentioned the Kenmore and having the block party in the fall. I don't know that I've ever done it, because usually the Kenmore programs are in the spring. So this will be kind of fun to see it in the fall by that time maybe a few changing leaves, but just a different feel to it. And you have really succeeded in making Kenmore more than just this museum where we walk in and we look at the ceilings and then we walk out. That there's way more to Kenmore than just that.
Oh yeah. And we really like thrive on making things interactive. So because we moved this program to the fall, I went to Mara, our archaeology lab manager, who also loves to do things in the kitchen. And I said, hey, do you want to do something autumnal themed in the kitchen? And she said, yes, of course I do. And she came back to my office a couple weeks later and said, hey, I'm going to do food preservation, because this is the time in the 18th century that you would start preserving food for the winter.
Yeah.
So a totally theme appropriate program. We get to open up the reproduction kitchen at Historic Kenmore. And because it's a reproduction, like I always say, we get to use it. So she's going to put a fire in there, mostly for ambiance, but you get the ambiance and then you can see her preserving some food. And she's super passionate about it. She had all these great ideas. She's going to do multiple things. And it's super fun to see her actually using the kitchen, utilizing the space, and really teaching kids about, we didn't have refrigerators, so this is what you had to do to preserve your food this time of year so you could eat in the winter.
Yeah. We've never talked about that, but that it would be like a huge thing that you'd have to start planning now for, and as you harvest things, to make it so, you know, it could hold up over the winter.
Yeah. Things like pickling that we don't think of, using salt to preserve food. I'm definitely not the expert. I will leave it up tomorrow, but she has so much information, and there's blog posts that she's written about it. So she's really going to really get in there and talk all about it.
Speaking of the blog, The Lives and Legacies, that's the name of it, I think.
Yes.
The blog, it's fascinating. All the different topics, and that's where I don't know that you wrote it, Dave, but I mean, I've at the quarter and the cellar house have been recent. I've seen recent things on that, but you can learn so much about both of these sites by just following that blog.
It is clearly our pride and joy to make those blogs and and build an audience in a different way than the traditional ways that museums do. And the crazy part is when, you know, academics write books, they only publish a couple thousand. The blog can reach, hundreds of thousands of people. and so and does. Mm-hmm. And so we're super happy with how that's turned out and get compliments on it all the time. Not only about its accuracy, but about the breadth of the topics that we cover in it.
I've learned so much from those, just and that it helps to, then we end up talking a lot of times we end up talking about some of those subjects when you all come here. But there are so many things going on at both sites beyond what we see, and that's just, I guess, a way for you all to be able to, as you study something, write about it and include pictures and that kind of thing.
And it is like a machine. There is, you know, a blog comes out every couple of days. I mean, it is regular, and
yeah,
and it forces, because, you know, we have to sort of produce all that content, it forces us to think about what we're doing and sort of and focuses on particular topics. And sometimes those topics grow into professional papers, and sometimes those topics grow into publications. It's a method of making us, you know, sort of holding our feet to the fire to sort of think about the stuff that we're learning about and sort of making it, communicating it to the outside public instead of just sort of keeping it inside.
It is just the frequency that we do these radio shows talking about it. I find interesting, but that blog is one of the first blogs, maybe the first historical blog that I ever started reading years ago, and that was when everything was being done, when there was a renovation of Kenmore, of going through mm-hmm. taking the house apart and learning about it. And it was just fascinating to learn about the floors and the walls and all of that kind of stuff.
And there was photographs of them like bringing in the carpet, bringing
yes.
in the furniture, putting up the wallpaper. I remember reading it long ago, and it was just so fascinating to me. And then we'd get to go and see the progress that they mm-hmm. had made in the actual space. And it was just such an exciting thing to read and then to experience it.
Well, and Kenmore's always been interesting. It's been so difficult to find things because it doesn't show up as much. It doesn't show up a lot in diaries and things. And you have learned things by pulling the wallpaper down and looking at the floors and those kinds of things.
I think the last couple things that we did, we pulled a couple of rat's nests apart
yes.
That were found during the restoration. And they, you know, rats are notorious collectors.
Yeah.
They collected newspapers from the early 20th century. And then, and so the idea was you put on your gloves
right.
and your mask, and you just start to sort of pull this thing apart and see what's in it. And it's, you don't know what you're going to find until you get there. And
isn't that interesting?
And so,
and there's a video of that on our YouTube channel. It's right. Megan and Mara pulling apart this rat's nest, and they're pulling out pieces of like cane chairs and textiles, and it's amazing to watch. Highly recommend.
Oh, I have to. That would be, you never know what you're going to be as a curator or any of this kind of stuff, what you're going to be forced to do sometimes.
That's right. It's an exploration in the world of gross.
yes. Again, the community block party is on the 28th, Saturday the 28th, from 10 to 2. And like you say, Allison, it'll give you a whole different view of Kenmore. Kenmore's a fun place.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of space to do things, and you can do games, and it's just a different setup there.
Mm-hmm. We treat it as a community space. You're always welcome to come on the grounds. It is free and open to the public every day that the gates are open. Come in, play some games, have a picnic with your family. That's the whole point of the block party to me.
Kenmore.org, the website for more information, also on Facebook. Town Talk powered this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Allison Ellis, Ann Waters, and Dave Maraca here this morning. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Ann Waters is here this morning. Allison Ellis is here this morning. And Dave Maraca, all from the George Washington Foundation, as we talk about Kenmore and Ferry Farm and things going on. Mini Mornings at the Museum. Yes. What a great name.
I know. It's an alliteration.
Yes. It is a fabulous name. As soon as I saw that, I thought, whenever that came, whoever came up with that.
Yeah, that was our old education director came up with a title. It stuck because it was very good.
Yeah, it is very good. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. No, very good. So that is going to be September 19th.
September 19th. So it's a Thursday. It's an hour-long program, 10:15 to 11:15. But essentially, it's a program we've been doing periodically to introduce like toddler-age children, 3 to 6, preschool, kindergarten, to our museum spaces. So it's a lot of fun. Typically, we do a similar structure every time, so parents and their toddlers know what to expect. But we'll do a story time. We'll do some type of activity or craft. And then after the program, the kids can go on like a family-friendly, you know, toddler-appropriate tour of the house. And then they also have access to the museum spaces as well. So this coming program will be at Kenmore, and they'll be exploring the gardens. So they'll read a book about gardens. They'll go on a little nature scavenger hunt through the garden, looking at things with magnifying glasses and kind of exploring the garden, and then doing a little take-home activity and craft as well. So it's been a really fun program, and it's always great to see especially our youngest visitors come out and kind of experience the space, and they're always very funny to kind of hear and see them explore and learn
like
things.
That. Yeah. Get them young.
Yes, yes. We have to encourage that love of museums young.
So did both of you get involved? Did your parents introduce you to museums at a young age?
We were definitely, I think, a historical family vacation goers. I really liked museums growing up. I would say my sister maybe did not. So she got dragged. But both my parents really like history. So she was the odd one out.
So how about you, Allison?
Yeah, so I think my mom really loves history, and I get to have the claim to fame of my first visit to Kenmore was at like 4 years old with my daycare, and I very vividly remember it. They were in the very early stages of the restoration. Everything was blank. I remember some exposed brick in the passageway.
Yeah.
And then I also went to Kenmore and Ferry Farm on my second grade field trip, like Anne was talking about. That was kind of one of our big field trips, and I've got photos of me during that field trip at Kenmore in my office. So we did things like this around Fredericksburg. I remember we did like the Timeless Ticket, which is now the X Pass. And we also went to Colonial Williamsburg a lot. I was just really fascinated. I was always like taking notes and taking pictures. And I have always loved history, and so has my family. So it's always been a big part of my life for sure.
So you really, you can take your kids to Kenmore. You can take them to Ferry Farm, you know, real young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the goal with this program. I think especially at like historic house museums, most parents would not maybe think to bring their toddler because the whole thing, you know, it's like don't touch, don't run, no, you know, these kind of like traditional museum rules. So the whole idea behind the Mini Mornings program is that it is supposed to be sort of an accessible, inclusive, like friendly space to toddlers. So we do a lot of like hands-on activity, you know, all related to the history of the site, but we try to do things that are more hands-on, or we'll do things, you know, outside or in different spaces where kids can kind of run around and explore and touch things and, look at things and experience the site, not going through on a tour where you can't touch anything essentially.
So. And I can talk about from a different experience, so when my kids were small, we would take them all over the place, and we would take them to museums and national parks, and now that they're college age, it's them saying, hey, let's go to, you know, and we want really like to go to such and such, and it's, you know, at first, when you first start taking them, they don't really know how to sort of react to them. But as the more times they go, the more they start to appreciate them.
Yeah.
And then now they're like sort of not that Amy and I are old, but you know they're sort of dragging us to the museums, and it's it's a great experience for us. It's very rewarding that all that time sort of invested in your kids, they get it through osmosis.
Yeah. Yeah, and just the stories that Anne and Allison that you have as kids. And especially Allison, you that you know, you went to, you know, you were at Kenmore and saw it all. So
yeah. Now I get to work here.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's never too young, and it's nice that there are those programs.
Yeah, and those experiences I think stick with you. Like you remember your field trips. I don't remember do I remember every historical fact that I learned? No, but I remember the experience of being at these sites and seeing the like dugout canoes at Jamestown. Like those just stick with you,
right?
Like, from a very young age, you're like, oh yeah, I remember going there.
Well, and I think that'll be some of the stories of people remembering the house at Ferry Farm, just because it's not your typical, you can touch things.
Mm-hmm. So as people come back and interact with me again, they go, well, the last time I was here, you know, and then they set up where the place was on its evolutionary journey.
Yeah.
And so, and then I always say, well, the next time you come, it'll look different again.
Well, in the house at Ferry Farm has just the weathering of the outside has changed its look so much.
We knew that inside and outside were going to sort of change. Conservators and curators try to slow that process down, but Mother Nature is relentless on the outside and sort of and making it look more and more aged every day. And so when you tell people it's built in 2018, I think people are surprised now, particularly from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
From
yeah.
the inside, you still see it's relatively new, but the outside is the sun and the wind and the rain are doing its job beautifully.
It is, and the shingles, because I know at first the roof just looked so new.
So it's funny to watch the outbuildings go through that process, because they look brand new.
Yeah, yes.
But the construction process is sort of stretched on, and now they're starting to show their age as well.
So again, mini mornings at the museum. I just like saying that.
I know, it rolls off the tongue.
It does. On September the
19th.
Mm-hmm. So get involved there. And again, the community block party at Kenmore on September the 28th from 10 to 2. October the 6th, gingerbread.
Yes.
This is a Kenmore thing.
Yes. Another alliteration for you, the Taste Through Time program. This is our second year
doing this. How did I miss that?
That one was all me, not to brag. But the Taste Through Time program is me and our research archaeologist, Emma, who I dragged into this because she is a baker. She is very knowledgeable about a lot of things, and she can also bake like there's no tomorrow. So I dragged her in because she is really good at the gingerbread. And this is a Kenmore program where we get to get into that reconstruction of the kitchen once again, and we put a fire in there, and we're actually cooking. So the gingerbread is probably one of the most involved things that we do in the kitchen, but Kenmore is famous for its gingerbread.
Mm-hmm.
We have Mary Washington's recipe that was sold or given to the Dromedary Cake Mix Company by the Kenmore Association in the 1930s, and they made mixes out of that recipe, and some of the funds that were raised from that went to support the saving of Kenmore. And then the ladies were also given the mix to serve in the kitchen, so they would make the gingerbread and serve it in the kitchen to all the guests, and that was done through the 1990s, so a lot of people still have really nostalgic memories about going to the kitchen at Kenmore and eating gingerbread by a lady dressed in colonial dress. So it's a very nostalgic thing, and that's kind of why we've brought a lot of the gingerbread back. It was a big part of our centennial celebration, and we are able to go in there, make the gingerbread in front of people, talk about the history of some of the ingredients, the history of the recipe, and also Kenmore's preservation history while we're cooking. And then we also have samples of the gingerbread, so if you haven't ever tried the gingerbread, you can have a sample while we talk to you. And then we also sell the mix still in in our gift shop. So if you really like the gingerbread and you're like, I want some of this for myself, you can take that mix home and make it. And I have done that, and it is amazing.
It is, because I'm not really a gingerbread person, but I felt like I'd done enough stories on it that I should at least try it. And it is. It really is good.
Yeah, yeah, it is so good. And it's a lot easier to do the mix than to make it at home. I mean, we do it in the kitchen. It's possible, but it is really easy when you just have the mix.
When you're able to cook it there, to do, I mean, I think that that's another thing that you're able to, it's a nice little touch to do that.
Yeah, yeah, and we do it, we're in historical dress, we have all the things on, so we are tending the fire. I was a Girl Scout, I can build a good fire, so we get that fire going. We get those heavy cast iron Dutch ovens, we rake coals, we mix the ingredients together, we're zesting oranges, we're squeezing orange juice, we're grating our nutmeg, we're doing all the steps that would have been done to make something like gingerbread in the 18th century, and you get to kind of watch us do it all, and then kind of see the final product as we take the Dutch oven off and we lift the gingerbread out, and it's glorious, and it's very exciting for us. We get a good fun time out of it, and we also just really enjoy talking to the public and being in costume in the kitchen. It's one of my favorite places to be, so it's a really personally fun program for me to run, but I think it also brings a lot of people joy to get that gingerbread at Kenmore once again.
And it demonstrates just how hard it was to do anything in the 18th century.
Yes,
it
is.
We forget that modern conveniences have sort of made our lives in some ways a lot easier, not in all ways, but in some ways. And then when you actually see an 18th century, something built in the 18th century way, it's a very amazing process.
Yeah, so not only is it like physically demanding, lifting all the cast iron, raking the coals, we are bending over and raking coals, and we actually have it easier because our hearth is raised, but in the 18th century, your hearth would have been like flush with the floor. It would have been level with the ground.
Oh, wow.
So you would have been bending over even further to rake coals out of the fire. And then it's also like things like timing and not having access to a sink. It's the small things. Like you can't just rinse your hands off when you're done getting messy. You just have gross hands and you don't have access to fresh water. If you need water, you have to go get it. It's all those little things that kind of add up over time when you're in the kitchen and you really realize like this was a totally different experience cooking in an 18th century hearth kitchen.
And you're just talking about cooking, you know, something like gingerbread or cooking one thing. When we were talking about meals, when you're talking about having to figure in food preservation.
I think personally, being a cook on an 18th century plantation, being an enslaved cook would have been one of the most difficult jobs because you have to think about timing and making sure that you bake bread for this meal in the evening, and you are making sure the food gets from the kitchen to the table hot and ready, and making sure all the elements are good, making sure nothing's spoiling where you have your food preserved for the winter. It's a big job, and these enslaved cooks were like really well trained in not only the English cooking but also French cooking and other cuisines, because it was a very demanding job, and whatever the plantation owner or whatever the woman of the house wanted, they had to make, like, and they had to do it correctly. It was a lot of pressure and a lot of work to do it right.
Yeah, no, it makes you appreciate just going to the fridge at night and pulling something out. You just didn't do that kind of, you just didn't have access to some of these things that we talk about.
Right, right.
So, these such interesting programs that you can learn so much, but especially the food part of that, and I know in a lot of ways that I know there are cookbooks and there are things out there that people have written about from recipes from back in that time, if you really want to get involved with it. But again, it's so much easier than how you'll be you know, cooking it during this time.
Yeah, you get a whole different experience when you go into the hearth kitchen. But it's very relatable because everybody has to eat. And so you can compare what we're doing to what you do at home.
Yeah.
Very different.
Kenmore.org is the website. George Washington Foundation, Kenmore and Ferry Farm. This morning with Allison Ellis, Dave Maraca, and Ann Waters here this morning. One final break, and we will wrap this up. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, tourstaffordva.com. newstalk1230.com. We'll conclude on Newstalk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on Newstalk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new Newstalk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
We're talking at George Washington Foundation this morning, Kenmore and Ferry Farm, kenmore.org. All kinds of stuff going on that you can find out if you go to kenmore.org and look at events, or you'll see them on the Facebook page. A couple of more events to wrap this up on. Deaf and Hard Hearing Day is October the 6th.
Mm-hmm. So we have two programs that day, but Deaf and Hard of Hearing Day is at Ferry Farm. This is an annual program that we do now at Ferry Farm in the fall and Historic Kenmore in the spring. And we have ASL interpreted tours. So you get to take a guided tour of the Washington House with an ASL interpreter, American Sign Language. We do suggest that people get tickets for that in advance on our website at kenmore.org, just so we can kind of keep track of who's coming. And we do keep the numbers limited to 10 people per session, just so everybody can have a good experience and make sure that they can see the interpreter while they're going through the house.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that was that this is what that this just started a few years ago, didn't it?
Well, I was actually doing some research on it, and it's been around for about 10 years, I think.
Okay,
one of our archaeologists was doing it pre-house. She would do more of an archaeology focus tour. And then once the house was built and completed, I think it kind of moved into just being a regular house tour with the ASL interpretation.
Okay, so get tickets for that, and that is October the 6th. Mm-hmm. Dog days at Ferry Farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to talk about dog days?
Sure. October 12th, 10 to 5. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing it for, we had a few different dog days now, so we have another one coming up in the fall. So October 12th, admission's $5 for adults, and then free for children 17 and under. So essentially it's a good way to be able to come out, see the Ferry Farm grounds for discounted admission. So bring your family, bring your dog. You can come and still take advantage of the grounds and the discounted price, even if you do not have a dog. But the grounds are dog friendly. And we do have trails along the property. We have some that go along the river's edge that I think some people don't know about. So it's a good opportunity if you're just looking for some place to walk or, you know, to explore the green space. Or a new place to bring your dog, socialize your dog. We've just started doing that to kind of make the grounds more accessible as an option for people. And they've been, I think, pretty well attended in the past. We've had some four-legged visitors for the last one. I think our, whose dog is it? Emma's dog, or one of our archaeologists, is our current mascot for dog days.
Oh, okay.
Instagram model.
Yes, our Instagram model.
Our spokesbarker.
She's an Airedale Terrier mix, so go to the social media to see her.
Yeah.
But it's just a fun event to come out, see the Ferry Farm grounds. Dogs are not allowed inside the house, the Washington House, but they are allowed on the grounds. So just a good way to get out, walk.
If the dog came into the Washington House, though, I mean, we talked about ways to make it. You're looking at me so skeptical.
Just let them loose.
I just wasn't sure where you were going.
We talked about the roof becoming, you know, letting dogs run around.
Paw prints.
And
George Washington loved his dog, so you know it all ties in.
It's free advice.
There it is.
free advice. We hardly have any time left. Night in Washington's Day. That's in early November, isn't it?
Yes, Saturday, November 2nd. That is a really fun program, and there's lots of information to come out on social media. So definitely just stay tuned for that. It's an evening program, 7 to 9:30. Get your tickets in advance. They are already on sale on our website, but you get to experience Kenmore like you would have in the evening at night in the 18th century. And we've got the an extra room open in the house. You'll get more than you did last year. So definitely stay tuned for more information on that one.
We'll hear more about that and maybe even provide some social media features on that. I know because people have been in Kenmore at night, just say it's a totally different experience than you see during the day.
Definitely.
So a lot of stuff going on. This is a busy time, and in all of these events are really for the whole family. Somebody In most of them, all members of the family can get something out of it. But especially next weekend, the community block party at Kenmore from 10 to 2 will be hopefully the weather's good and you can do a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and again, as many times as I can say that. What a great opportunity if you've got grandkids or you've got kids around or you're
looking to try something new or like introduce your toddler to a new experience. So it's a lot of fun.
So thank you all for the update. And next time we get together, it's amazing to think we'll be talking about some of the holiday programs.
Yay. Yeah.
Been a fast, fast year. Dave Maraca and Waters, Allison Ellis. We'll see you soon.
See ya.
Town Talk, powered by Stafford Tourism this morning. For information on events and activities, tour StaffordVA.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.